Good afternoon and welcome everyone. Today is Tuesday, April 4th, 2017. It is still 2 p.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a legal counsel update. We've got a couple of agenda items that are tangential to legal counsel that we'll start out with. But we do have a fairly large agenda, and then we're going to go into executive session after that. That'll be item number 9. And at that time, we'll ask the audience to go back into the hallway and read on those elements. But until then, we'll go with number 1, which is order number 2017-018 in the matter of adoption of the Joint Economic Development Strategic Plan for the City of Grants Pass in Josephine County, the formation of a collaborative economic development committee, and adoption of committee bylaws. So, Ms. Meltzer, as our Community Development Director.
Sure. You've all been given a copy of the plan and the committee structure and the bylaws and the resolution that was passed by the City of Grants Pass. Basically, this relates to the effort that was started a couple years ago before both Susan and I were employed. This is Susan C. Ryder. She's a business advocate with the City of Grants Pass. The plan was put together after a number of charrettes and public involvement. You've seen that before you. The city did adopt that plan as presented. There's also one of the key elements of that plan is to create an economic development committee to work on strategic plan issues. And that committee structure is supposed to have members selected by the city and those selected by the county. When Commissioner Walker was a commissioner member, she actually sat down with the assistant city manager, myself and Susan, and worked through a list of, we all agreed, who the city would appoint and who the county would appoint, and that was brought to us for review, I believe before you came on board, Commissioner DeYoung and Morgan. You see what was selected in front of you. The only change from what was originally discussed on that committee structure was when the city went to approve the committee, they actually removed the education member and made it a member at large. And, you know, Susan can answer that, but I believe it was because there is a whole section devoted to education in the plan, and the thought was that you would pull in education professionals at that time instead of having them be a committee member. If I'm incorrect on that, Susan, please correct that. And then, of course, we have the bylaws to...
Let's not move past that.
Sure.
Let's talk about committee structure first and get that kind of...
Sure.
And the bylaws elements. So any discussions on that? I have a couple of points about the educational element. It being a component of this strategic plan, it's also one of those things. There's two things to talk about that. The BNRE study consistently rates workforce development is an issue. It's also something of the strategic plan for the Regional Solutions Program has a very robust desire to have education at the table. I know it's part of SORETI's objectives, so it's really important that that be a component, even though it's somewhat tangential to probably an economy. There's one more element that I wanted to tie in. I know that's a bunch of stuff really fast. Was that, as I understand, in the coming jobs war, a survey done of 180 countries around the world, high school graduation rate was the number one consistent indicator of a successful economy or an unsuccessful economy, even as an indicator or
predictor of criminality as well.
Yeah, it has a lot of factors that go into just the health of a community. And so I can't help but think that that's an important component. So making it a, I guess I need to relook at the structure because I know that there's 5 that was going to be selected by the city, 5 that were selected by the county, leaving out of the 13, 3 other elements that was the chamber representative. I don't have it 100%.
RCC, which is education.
So maybe that is the higher education.
That's and there is no doubt that education is very important, and we are definitely, you know, the plan definitely focused on that. And on part of the goals, workforce development and entrepreneurship, One of the tasks is to convene a task force to coordinate education and workforce development programs to fully engage the private sector. So it's definitely going to be addressed. There is no slight to education.
One of the things that I, you know, just on my own personal, I had a niece that got to 11 years, 4 months, and some odd days in her K through 12 field, and then she decided to quit. And she thought, it doesn't matter. Nobody looks at a diploma. I said, it's a barometer to whether or not you'll complete something you started. I said, it doesn't matter whether you complete with A's, B's, C's, or D's. You need to complete. When you commit to doing something, you need to follow that all the way through to the end. And when you stop just inches of the finish line, you just told me that you know, you're not somebody I want to hire. Because when I give you a task, I want to complete it. And you just showed me, you know, you've invested 11 and a half years and you're down. It was very important to me. So I think that graduation rate is, you know, that's maybe where internationally they're looking at societally, are you going to be willing to finish something? And maybe that's what they're looking at. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist.
I have that book on my shelf.
Oh, more reading? Sure.
Right?
And I would like to add, too, that the chamber is a point when, and the chamber actually has the superintendent of Grants Pass serving on the board. And so I think education is becoming more involved. I think it is integrating into what our whole what our whole concern is. So education is most definitely important.
I agree it's important, so much so that I had reached out to Shauna Bland, who is the incoming high school Grants Pass School District 7's she's taking over the career development.
Right.
And she's the one that's tasked with integrating with the community, with that stuff, getting their kids doing the internships and all that other kind of stuff. I presented her the OSU Extension information so that when we got back from County College and we had that information of how they are working in other communities, this could be a potential. I sent her to the day, the council meeting,
right,
and said, hey, they're going to be forming their committee. Go talk to them. And she left upset when this position was eliminated because the statement was that RCC can handle all the education, which is not true. Our issue is getting our kids out of junior high and high school. And even coming out of community corrections, where we know that 10th grade completion is a huge indicator for future criminality. More so, third grade reading level at third grade is what they're predicting future jail bed
days
for,
right,
that statement. So
yeah,
if we're not focusing on K through 12 education and only waiting for RCC, we're missing the boat. I think. But the fact that there's going to be a separate task force, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we have to start thinking in terms of where do we engage our high school kids. And some of them are not college bound, some of them are not military bound, but where are we bringing traded sectors, not traded sector in the sense that Soretti's talking, but in the trades, bringing those back. RCC is focused on some of those with welding and mechanics and stuff like that. But if we don't get something back in schools that is job-related, job skills, where they can get a job when they're done, this is our workforce issue.
Right.
And other than minimum wage jobs, we're in trouble. So
it's really important that we structure that. There's obviously a need. We discussed that. How is it made, you know, enforced in the structure of this committee that's a priority, both for the city and the county? Is RCC enough? The city removing that specific delineated position, do we make up for that on the county side with the five that we have? Commissioner Dion?
Well, I know when I was in high school, there was an ag program, and you know how many people from the ag program actually became farmers. It was ag program, forestry, you know, all kinds of different programs, and they were all eliminated, and it was just the 3 R's after that. And I think that's, you know, those are very informative years where you're molding young people to where they want to move on. And I, you know, I was one of those kids that there was an auto shop class, and I took that. And today I'm, you know, I picked my own car and everything else. I don't do the modern stuff, but I've still made a decent living at repairing cars and whatnot, and not to mention what I did myself. But it just went away, and I think we lost maybe a generation or two in getting them interested in something. You know, they got to get into something to, you know, burn off that energy. And I was that way. I've got a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, that he wouldn't give 2 cents if he wasn't interested in it. But if it was something he was interested in, put it right in front of him, and boy, he took it and run with it. He was just fantastic. And I think you might know his name, Ron Martin. He started the photo dam. He was not interested in heating and air conditioning or anything like that because he worked for me for 4 years. And I said, finally, I said, cut it off. So what did he do? He got interested in cameras because that's where his love was. And I think he's made it, been fairly successful at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something putting putting something in front of them, and I think we're missing that at the high school level.
I will say this, there are a lot of efforts to address what you're talking about, to get those vocational skills in and working with the children. We do have on our SREDI business retention and expansion committee, we do actually have one of the high school principals there that works with us. And then Susan is part of an educational group that tries to organize some of this. So we definitely understand that, and we're part of groups. We can't do it on our own. And because it is a big component of the plan, we'll continue to carry that through. We'll continue to hammer on that. I know with the city of Grants Pass, I was actually talking with Tom Schauer, one of the planners, about a week or two ago, and he's doing some work as well to try and get more going in the schools, to try and get some of those skills back.
I would like to see some grading or whatever, if you would, you know, because we get these things started, and then we just kind of, okay, and they get put on the back burner. There's really no goal that we can achieve. So that's what my entire reservation is about economic development, is I want to see some results. And I'm sorry, but, you know, I've sat in, I don't know how many economic development meetings over and over and over and over. Everybody's got really good intention, really some intelligent people in the room, smart people, dedicated people in the room, and then at the end of the day, you say, well, what did you get done? And they go, I don't know if that's measurable. And that's what I'm...
Right.
In your measuring device on this go-around. If we're going to be putting money in from the county side, and the city's certainly got a heap of money in this thing, I really want to see some results in the next 4 years that I'm here for sure.
Absolutely.
And some actual milestones and say, we did this. We completed that. We've got it done. And so that's what I'm interested in.
Mr. Moore?
My question would be, who picks the 13? Could it not be amended to say that it be 5 by city, 5 by county, and then 5 of the other, and have one be RCC, one be Three Rivers, one be Grants Pass School District, the other one be the chamber, and have a 15-member committee, and that the school district appoints one to represent from each of the school districts, so both county and city are at the table. We keep talking about all these plans we want to make, but if we don't have the entire system at the table as part of that plan, it doesn't matter if we're working with them in other ways. The most success is going to come if they're at the table creating the plan with us, because they have to direct their own industries. They can go on without us even existing. Their success can be measured separately, but we're not working as a community if they're not at the table.
There was a lot of back and forth of how many committee members there would be, and it was definitely a discussion of, if we have too many members, that's going to be a lot of people at the table. And again, education, we have a member at large who could be education. The city chose to have a member at large, which could be anyone. That could be education. That could be our education piece there. It was strategically placed to say, you know, we cannot fit every single sector in this. If we had every single sector and stakeholder at the table, you know, it would be a committee too large. We're going to have a liaison for the county. We're going to have a liaison for the city. We're going to have a liaison from Cape Junction, in addition to the committee members, in addition to Julie and I. And then not only does one of the items concentrate directly and specifically state that we should have a task force for workforce development and entrepreneurship, we also have another section of the whole makerspace business incubator public market. And in that conversation, there's already works, and we already realize, I keep on saying we, the city and other stakeholders realize that the high school is imperative, and the education and a pathway for the high school, and even before high school, the importance of a pathway to get to a structure where they can have a living wage job. So it's not being denied.
So two things. The structure of this committee, being that this is the first inception, can certainly be changed by both jurisdictions if we choose that there's something missing. This doesn't have to be perfect. And starting out, the one thing that I would suggest, and I like the member at large opportunity to address Commissioner Morgan is talking about, and so the easy fix for that, as I see it, and being the liaison to both of these issues with an ag business degree, I'd like to put ag, I'd like to structure number one, natural resources / forestry / agriculture, which affords us the opportunity within our five to have a member at large without objection of the board. I think those kind of go along together. And when I initially suggested the structure of this committee, I think I did it that way. I had a 15-person committee, and I didn't want it any bigger than that, and I don't think I wanted it any smaller than 9 to accomplish all the things. But I spent a few months writing down all of those issues that I think Commissioner Walker started with this structure, and it's really good. I don't know about specifically transportation and airports having its own liaison, its own specific person. Item number 3. That's a lot of a position for perhaps not the most dynamic type of a place. Transportation and airports. It's a fairly fixed element in our economy. It doesn't really have a lot of opportunities for change within this thing. It's a 5-year, 10-year master plan that's going to be redone this next year. It's kind of set, and so I don't know how much that position would actually bring to the group. It'd have to be the right person for that.
That was one of the identified items to invest infrastructure in the Grants Pass Airport, and I think that's where the appointment of maybe someone from transportation or airport could possibly make that.
I just don't want the board restricted to having to find somebody who fits that bill. Maybe we do in the first round, but the next round, those things, it's a 10-year program where if you want FAA development of an east side taxiway, that's done. The extension of the runway, that's in the queue for the next 5 years. And that's already set up. I think it's important. We're working on that. It's really a stretch for me to appropriate one person that we are. Are we bound to fill that role under this structure?
We are. It could be one of the first ones that expire. So when we appoint these, some expire March of 18, some of March of 19, etc. It could be maybe that's the first one that expires in March of 18 to just give it time to see is there value in having them there, or do we need to come back and revisit that and perhaps have a different industry represented on that committee?
Well, I see the potential of the economy grow through the airports. I mean, obviously, if the industrial parks connected to them, the recruitment of businesses related to having access to taxiway and jet access in and out. It is a critical component if it's part of a plan. It's not a lot of staff that we have. Mm. Like-size airports and other communities have a lot of staff. Mm. We have 2.
And it's not going to change.
No.
It is what it is. I mean, the direction that it's already on, there's nothing this committee is going to be able to really influence the dial on that. And I don't want to say it's not important. It is. But it is going where it's going, and there's nothing this committee can actually influence on that direction.
What I think could happen is the potential of where are they as part of the table with bringing in some companies. So the airport's not going to change, but they lease property to people. They bring in different businesses at least having them at a part of the conversation. But you're right, it's
what
a big spot.
What if we expanded number 3 to include, like, the industrial park, that business area, which is not necessarily afforded an opportunity on here, which is industrial manufacturing land, something to that. It broadens the opportunity to have somebody representing that. Because they are getting more and more joined at the, based on the sewer system and infrastructure and stuff.
Yeah, the airports alone's not, but the potential of bringing in companies that can utilize, and so who would they want to rent to? Who would they try to say, hey, have you looked at coming and leasing space from us at this airport because of, we have this industrial land over here, you could keep me.
I can see the connection there. I think there's a real connection between the airport and the improvements in the airport. We're not changing what we're going to do out there, but we need to know how that fits in with the industrial, like you say, the industrial park. I'm looking at Madras again, using Madras, mm-hmm. and I use it a lot because I did go on a field trip out there. And that changed their entire community because Madras, I don't know whether they improved their airport, but I think that their airport was there and they improved the infrastructure to it. And they didn't really do it, spend a ton of money on the airport per se and runways and approaches and ramps on. They just improved the fact, and then started advertising that the airport has been there all along, but how the airport would fit into maybe your style of business. Like our airport right now is starting to be very important to people in the corporate jets over Bedford. They don't want to land over there.
Right.
So we need to be moving in that direction to say we have something over here. And we just may have one guy fly over the top of Paradise Ranch and go, what's that? But if we don't push the fact that the airports, that we've got those things going, I see your connection with the industry and everything else.
It's so can we expand number three to just include like the industrial park?
Transportation, airports, industrial park, industry?
Something. That'll be fine. We probably need to put this to bed. So we have a lot of things to cover. And then the other, if there's any other adjustments to the committee?
I mean, I understand we don't want a huge committee. I also know that we invest a lot into addictions in this community, and we invest a lot into prevention, where both school districts are at the table. It's not going to serve our community well if Three Rivers isn't at the table, as well as Grants Pass. The Grants Pass can't represent the county schools. They have different issues with the economies they're facing in the communities where they're representing. And I think that if we're only focusing on our investments with our youth with prevention of addiction, but not with job development with them at the table, we're missing the boat. I think it'd be worth throwing on a sixth person on each of them and saying, you got school district on both of them, and you have 15. But that's just me. I think they need to be at the table.
Can we have an educational task force?
Yes, it's in there. We realize that labor is the single most important cost factor for businesses, and the education starting at an early age, it's not going to be ignored. I think that it is one of the highlighted goals that we have in the plan to address. So it's not going to not be addressed. And when we do have the task force, we can pull in Three Rivers and Grants Pass and, more representatives.
So one of the things that I'd say in support of that structure, as opposed to having somebody specifically on here, if this committee is talking about things that maybe aren't relevant to the education committee, I've heard from Peter, who serves on Regional Solutions, because I asked him to, there's a lot of conversations that happen at Regional Solutions that have nothing to do with education, and there's really no tie-in. And so it's kind of sometimes he finds it tough to make it to those meetings when there are stuff that really doesn't touch what he's needing to be involved in. So having the task force, every meeting of the task force is relevant to his issues. So we're all spread so thin. It might seem good, but let's check if it's possible. I would like to move forward with this round and then reevaluate the committee structure in like a year. And I think the city should have the same expectation to say,
we're missing somebody at the table.
Yeah. Right. And it might be somebody that we isn't even on our radar.
Mm-hmm.
So if that works, just to get it moving. This has been a year and a half, 2 years in the making, so
we don't want it to sit on the shelf. We want to start moving.
Does that work?
I'll refrain. I still think they need to be at the table.
Okay.
We're going to miss out if we don't.
At the end of the year, we will see, if they come forth and say, no, we need to be there, rather than at the task force level.
They won't even know they don't need to be there, because they're moving on with doing what they know to do, and they're... We have a chance from day one to direct this in a way that I'm going to go back to my first year on City Council and League of Oregon Cities and my tour of Springfield. Is it Sid that's the commissioner in Lane County? It was the one who started the task force in Lane County, where they got Springfield, the county, the school district, and public works all on board, and they stopped thinking in silos of individual entities, where they found that they were all competing for the same dollars, they were all working on their separate plans, they were all kind of going and they weren't getting as much accomplished, and they just decided to form a co-op, and the agencies worked together, and all of a sudden they were advocating on behalf of each other towards financing, and they ended up in the long run getting more financing than they would have individually, and they got a massive transportation in the community, they had a community development, they got their downtown revitalized, they did all these things together because they stopped looking individually. by not having them at this table and just putting them in the room of your just education, stay over there, they might not hear that opportunity to bring in manufacturing and training back into the high school. They might not hear how natural resources can be taught, and forest management is something that the high school level should know about. They might not understand that the airports have a high school and college level training that as a student you can get better pilot training and credit for hours before you're at a high, you know, at different levels. If they're not at the table, they don't know how to expand it. And that's all I'm saying is if we go forward without them, we're doing what we've always done.
I don't think we're going forward without them, though. I disagree that we're going forward without them. And we're relying on volunteers because this is a volunteer committee. And so when we send out the applications to both the county and the city, we could have someone who was a teacher or who could be a teacher and other, they could fit in more than one of these. They could be a manufacturing and teacher or something.
It's not imperative that you respond. It's she's debating with us.
I apologize.
No, it's okay. I appreciate your response. But really, Commissioner Morgan's debating with the two of us as to whether or not we endorse her proposal of adding another member.
I apologize.
It's okay. I just didn't want you to feel obligated or the responsible party. I hear what you're saying. I do. And I think we have capacity to try to achieve those outcomes even with the proposed structure, and advocating that both the liaison from the county and the city carry that torch and focus. Mm-hmm. That it's obviously a priority of this board, and we'll carry that for a year, and if we need to change it after that, if it's not being satisfied, I think that's my position, is that we give it a shot for a year.
Does anything at the table a lot when you put this together and say, I'm from education and I want to be here? I mean, did you have anybody?
Other than the teacher I sent to the committee who left so angry that she was excluded?
I responded to her after and John, too, and I explained that there was going to be a task force that was going to be totally devoted to education. So I did address
that. And her response?
She was fine. I mean, I've met with her before, and I, like Simon suggested, we have the capacity to go out and do the outreach. We're the liaisons for this committee, and we can inform the public and the high school and the elementary schools of what's going on. So I believe that they understood that. It was my understanding that she, you know, understood that after I explained that.
You got an awful lot of work in this thing, and like I say, I don't want to belabor it for the next 6 months or 8 months, but I do want to review it a year. I think that's very important to see what's coming.
That'll be something that I think we need to integrate into, like, the charter and the bylaws, that there's an annual report.
I think there's something in there that does, I do believe.
I'm trouble really kind of following the bylaws section.
And as the city requires all of its six committees to report annually, and so clearly that intent will follow through on the city side, and I'm guessing that all we're putting together a report for us, you're going to get the same report.
Great. Yeah. So if the structure's good, the bylaws, any changes for that? Anything you wanted to review, Michelle?
Just a note that if we change the committee structure, that also has to be changed in the bylaws. The bylaws would be amended to reflect that as well.
I don't remember reviewing the structure. That was supposed to be how we chartered Commissioner Walker to work on this with the city. Most effective should have been that there was a proposed revision brought back to both bodies. And if I missed that meeting, I apologize. But I haven't seen this as a board discussed for a final, yes, we're done, we reviewed it, it looks good. So that was what was kind of took me back a little bit about the city approving something, and then yet, if we change something, they've approved bylaws that are not consistent with our bylaws because we've suggested two changes, or at least one, changing the ag industry and providing a county member at large position. So I don't know how that works, but
after we had the exact same concerns when we brought what was proposed and agreed upon to the two bodies, and then our council, similar to what you're doing right now, went through the debate and said, gosh, we like, and I think what they actually did is put an industry member from the commercial area. There was always a position at large, but they decided, gosh, this is important to us, and so they modified it, which meant if you'd have already adopted it, one or the other, so as you adopt this and send it back, I'll take it back to our council too, so that they can amend ours to match, so they're the same thing. I just wanted to thank you for the interest and the participation and working together on this. It might not be perfect, but we're going the same direction for the first time in 20 years on economic development. This something is better than nothing, and this isn't just something. This is something that I think has a lot of merit.
What I didn't want is that the city has this interpretation that we'd already pre-assumed that was a final structure and stuff, and now they're
changing it. Your adopted order will make it clear.
Now they're changing it, and then it throwing the city off. Wait a second, I thought they had already done that, or had bicycles or whatever. So, if that's the only change in the bylaws, then the actual economic development plan I had been discussing with you guys a little bit before the meeting actually started, and there's some real hesitations on my part for adopting the section that references forestry. And so I'm going to be advocating strongly that the county adopt the plan without that component. I don't want the committee being given the direction of how that is defined or codified. That's not the county's position. I know that because I've been carrying the forestry banner for the county for 6+ years. And there are I'll use one example of a paragraph that's referencing the private sector's efficiency with forest management could be improved by 50% by implementing 3 different things. One of them is including thinning practice. Oregon forestry, private forestry practices are the most efficient forest generating product processes in the world. And so for somebody to speculate to say that it could be improved by 50%, by up to 50% on the private sector, first off, I'm not really sure how that necessarily positively impacts the county or whether or not that's our role to advocate. We have the Oregon State Forest Practices Act, which guides thought private and public forest practices within the state of Oregon, which is fairly robust as far as comparison with Washington's practices and California's. That's the structure that we all are guided by, and that works. How a private forester wants to manage for efficiencies or productivity, it's really up to them. And the Practices Act is the only place that either the county or the state should advocate for that level of productivity or efficiency. And so that one element, amongst a handful of others, just things that are put in are not anything that I think I can support. And there are also elements, it's not just what is said, it's what isn't said about where the forest industry should be going in Josephine County and in Southern Oregon. Embracing ecological forestry, sure, that sounds good, sustainable forestry, but also integrating ourselves into where the market is going with cross-laminate technology. That's mentioned 0 times. That is the number one driving forestry component that's driving policy in the state and in the Northwest, and it's not mentioned. It's a real shortcoming, not on behalf of anyone in particular, but it just goes to the heart of how whoever they contracted with, and his name is on there, with Eco Northwest, didn't understand the issue in Southern Oregon. They regurgitated a bunch of statistics and stuff, and I'm well-versed in forestry statistics. It fell short, and it was bent in the wrong direction. So... Yes, sir. Remind me to.
Okay, let me take chair. Sorry. I didn't think I was coming to engage you this much. But in fact, when that was provided as an annex and something that would be adopted, we had similar concerns, and we actually changed that. You'll see that in that report, it talks about an informational element. So now that is a separate report. It's not something that we plan on following. It was provided as information and background. And
okay.
So we made it specific not to be a recommendation because we had similar concerns of it. How do you try to encompass all of that in a recommendations? And what they did is they provided, here's an informational annex.
I looked at it from that perspective, too. It wasn't just informational. There was recommendations. There was inferences of the industry, why it had declined. There was 3 contributing factors. There was things that were missing, and one of those contributing factors was not correct. in my opinion.
That's why we actually took it out as an annex and made it an informational report in the final product.
Okay. I'm okay with having it included as an informational report, but it can't be included in a plan that the committee can look at as a reference of where the county or the city council want to go.
The city council is in on that same page.
That sounds perfect.
And thank you for your, you provided a kind of eye-opening and let us down the direction of analyzing that. Is this really an annex? And council didn't want it as an annex either.
Good.
They wanted it as an informational report.
That's excellent. I'm okay with that then. I don't have any other objections to the plan other than to restate that I don't think it necessarily is a comprehensive document that the county has already discussed either with this board or previous board. It falls significantly short of what my expectations were for a plan. So my first charge, I would hope, for the committee is to take a review of that, find out the holes, find out what's an asset, and maybe even submit a new plan for the council and the board to review and adopt and say, yes, this is the new direction for this committee. Because right now what we have is
skeleton.
The committee element was the most positive, and that was a suggestion probably made by Aaron and myself to establish this whole process 3 years ago. We knew that going into this. So anyway, we can get it going and move it forward, in my opinion. Is there any other thoughts that the board has? No. Pat?
I'm just wondering if you need changes made to this before tomorrow.
Only the structure of the committee, I think.
The committee and the bylaws.
In the bylaws.
So
it's the same change.
Yeah.
Well, don't you just hand it in later? Okay.
So it's in two places.
So it's just to make sure we're all on the same page before we leave this topic. Number one is forestry, natural resources, and agriculture. No.
No. Natural resources. That's the broad heading. Subcomponents of natural resources I see as both forestry and agriculture.
So you want those two names taken off?
No. Natural resources is first.
Colon.
Colon.
Natural
forestry
resources, colon, forestry.
Slash ag.
Or ag, but then we're leaving out any other mineral resources. If we just define ag and forestry, what other natural resources do we have?
Mineral, that would be the typical third.
So
I'm sure glad you asked for clarification.
Yes. Why don't we just leave it natural resources?
There's nothing wrong with that. I don't see. Is there a shortcoming in that?
No, but I would just say
agriculture is not always regarded as a natural resource.
It's not. You specifically need a list ag.
So take out forestry and just have natural resources and agriculture.
That'll work.
Okay, so the first one is natural resources and agriculture, period. And then two is tourism. Three is transportation, airports, industry. Even though industry is represented in the city, so we're going to have two on there. Just so
yeah, I think we've got
that.
Separate interests in industry.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have marijuana on ours because of we have ag, so.
Or industry.
And then we have member at large, and we have technology.
You can put member at large last.
Yeah, we'll reorganize the list.
That sounds good. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good structure. It covers a lot of bases.
Yep. Okay. So we're going to probably have to amend the actual order a little bit because the way we structured that was to have you have the board essentially approving and affirming what the city did. So now you're going to adopt your own.
Oh.
And it'll be.
So you're saying we're going to approve these changes and send it back to the city?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the city will then get it and know that it's changed. So
and we're not changing anything in the city, so they'll hopefully acquiesce in the amendment.
It's almost exactly what the city did to you.
Yeah.
And we can live with that. We'll adopt the changes over the same.
Great.
Yeah. Okay.
And then after the city adopts it, then we can start advertising for our members.
Great. So do we have a schedule for advertising and approval and stuff? I mean, I would like to get it.
Parties were adopted, and so I will do everything I can to make sure that this appears on the 19th meeting. So we have a meeting tomorrow. In 2 weeks, we'll have another meeting.
Good.
I'll go ahead and, since I'm expecting this to
I have it tomorrow, right? This one that comes
yeah.
before the board again. That will provide me enough time to get it back in front of council. So we will plan on advertising the day after the 19th.
Okay.
The
20th. And we should do the same.
Yep.
And then
and have 2 or 3 weeks.
A couple of weeks, yeah, to be real.
My understanding.
Maybe 3 weeks.
I was going to say, my understanding is you have a joint meeting on May 1st to discuss some of this. Maybe that's when you finalize those appointments.
Great.
That's not enough time for. Is that enough time for?
Probably not to get enough applications in. I mean, there's some folks who know they want to participate and
mm-hmm.
we're going to have those in immediately. But there will be others who will say, gosh, that sounds like a neat place. I'm going to find out more about it before they get there.
Oh, yeah, no, we're not going to have enough time.
Okay. So we'll go at least 2 or 3 weeks of advertising to make sure people have a chance to respond. And
so maybe by the end of May.
Yeah, that's a good target.
Okay. It'd be great to start, like, the new fiscal year with
mm-hmm.
stuff well underway.
It would be. I'll work with staff to make sure we get the committee's offers off that.
Great. Okay, thank you so
thank
much.
You
I think we handled all of those. So it's really
thank
good.
You.
Item one. A lot of item one. Everything else is actually should be pretty quick.
Do you
have anything else?
Can I just ask real quick?
Yeah.
Quick. Did you want a presentation for tomorrow's meeting when this is on the agenda for tomorrow?
I think it would be a good idea.
Presentation or just a brief summary like we had today?
Well, no more than what we had today.
Got it.
That took 42 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, just an overview would be great.
Okay. I'll do that.
So I think the structure is pretty good. We do have courts. Can you structure it that way?
Why is Kirk here? Kirk is on items 2 and 3.
Oh, good. Let's
and
just go with those then.
One more administrative, if I may. So just so everyone's clear, items 1 through 5 are all currently scheduled for tomorrow's business session.
Okay.
So.
We need action on those ASAP.
Indeed. I stated that items 1 through 5 are all on tomorrow's business session.
Yeah. Well, I thought we had kind of delegated Commissioner DeYoung on item 4 and 5 to facilitate those. So those ones should be very simple. Item number 3 should be really simple. So yeah, let's just
go
through
them. Yeah,
I thought
we
already
approved.
We'll get through them pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So item number 2, Councillor Hicks, is county participation opt-out and community dispute resolution program through University of Oregon School of Law.
Yes, every year this comes before the board for consideration, and this is I'm getting it wrong. Sorry, folks. Reset. Every 2 years, this comes before the board. It comes before the board routinely. And what they're asking you to decide on tomorrow will be whether you're going to actually put out an RFP for a mediation program or whether you are prepared to acknowledge there's really only one bidder anyway. And you would opt out, and the University of Oregon School of Law would essentially take it from there. And so we can do some more presentation on that piece. I think we have folks here to describe. It's probably important, this being the first go-round with this program, to provide a little background.
Probably.
Okay. So
and I was here for the last actual vote on it, but I heard it
more chairs.
A couple of times.
Okay. Thanks for
your patience.
Yep. Okay.
So if you wouldn't mind introducing yourselves, starting with Mr. Brust.
Yes. Good afternoon, Commissioners and Council. Kirk Brust with the State Courts. And it's my privilege to introduce two representatives from Resolve Mediation, Sestetra Ferguson. She's the Executive Director. And Brian
Bronke.
Bronke.
He's one of those fun last names.
He's the Program Manager.
Great. Well, welcome. Do you want to lead off, Mr. Brust,
well,
on kind of an overview of what you guys, what the program provides?
A really high overview of the program. Actually, Josephine County started community dispute resolution program back in the mid-90s when it was Josephine County Community Services Senior Programs. They applied for and received the grant funding at that point in time. And then there was a nonprofit group, a I believe it was called Common Ground Mediation, that was established here locally, and that was a separate nonprofit board of directors. And we contracted with them to provide services within the community. It was neighbor-to-neighbor mediation at that time. There was also school-based mediation. And over time, that program dissolved, and we had no service provider for mediation services in Josephine County. However, in Jackson County, there was a very well-established and strong mediation program. At the time, it was Mediation Works.
Yep.
So, gosh, I don't know how many years ago, the court contracted with Mediation Works, now Resolved, to provide small claims mediation, which is mandatory in all small claims filings. And we've been talking over the years of expanding our services to hopefully include FEDs, which is evictions. But at this point, I'm here to just basically introduce and provide support and answer any questions. Delta, do you want to?
Well, I just want to thank the board for inviting us today and for giving us a chance to speak to you. I know this is a procedural piece that, and we have some new county commissioners, so it's good that we're meeting, and I appreciate that very much. We've prepared some reports and some information for you so you can see the way in which Resolve is serving Josephine County, and I'd like to pass those out to you now if I can.
More reading, I'm sorry.
Actually, they're simple reports, which is the best kind, right?
Absolutely.
So that's important. I want to be able to just take a few minutes just to tell you about what the services that we provide, but then I also want there to be time to make sure and answer any questions that you might have, and especially regarding the opt-out process, opt-out, opt-in process, and so you can understand how that works, essentially. Resolve is part of a network of community dispute resolution centers that are across Oregon, that exist across Oregon. Common Ground was part of that when it existed in Josephine County, but then it did dissolve, as Kirk talked about. And so now, Resolve in Jackson County, or housed in Jackson County, has been serving both counties. I'm going to let Brian is our Director of Mediation and Facilitation. I'm going to let him talk about the contents of the report, but basically it's in two sections. One is about the mediation services that we provide and that we're working in Josephine County. And then you'll notice that we're called Resolve Center for Dispute Resolution and Restorative Justice. So we do both mediation and then something called restorative justice, which is essentially a form of a kinship kind of relationship to mediation. It's a set of dialogues that are set up to work within the justice system and, again, in complement to the justice system. And we use restorative justice primarily with young people, working in juvenile justice. We've been working with Jackson County and with Josephine County. And then we're reaching into the schools now and beginning to bring restorative justice to the schools as a way to deal with harm and discipline in the schools and to help the schools try to lower their suspension and expulsion rates and improve graduation and attendance. And these are pieces you guys just talked about,
right,
and how critical those pieces are to success for our kids. They have to want to come to school. They have to feel in relationship to each other, to the teachers, and to the schools in order to feel to be successful. And that's just very fundamental. It's very logical and fundamental. So we're beginning to identify that if we can help kids build those relationships well, and then when there are incidents that need discipline and so forth, instead of suspending them or removing them from school, we hold them accountable for what they've done and help them reintegrate into the school, that they're much more successful and that we're actually positively impacting those kids, the teachers and the classrooms and everything. So it has lots of potential there. So I wanted to fill that piece out because Kirk talked about the mediation piece. We also provide mediation in Jackson County as well in a similar fashion. So Brian, what would you like to add to that?
I think it's just echoing on Kirk's. One of the things I have in there is the report from the Oregon office, which is the broader one, and to back up to that high level, is back in 2006, there was an actual government body that oversaw the community dispute resolutions and also the public policy side of that. In 2006, in the downturn of the budget, those split. And so the state did a Hail Mary, in my opinion, in which the law school at U of O took over all the community programs and through this grant process has been awarding it every 2 years. And one of those key pieces is that we have to match that 100% dollar for dollar of those few state dollars that come through. And then PSU holds the public policy. I heard you mention earlier regional solutions. And mm-hmm. They're also one we work with as well in that process, has the public policy side. And over the years, every 2 years, the grant process comes out in which the counties are asked is, do you want to select the provider of the county, or do you want to have the university do that function through their grant administrator? And it's gone both directions here in Josephine County. There's not a right or wrong. There's a amount of work involved in it mm-hmm. is the primary one. And since we started back in 2009, the piece that you're there is the service report where it talks about the numbers of we serve in that. And in this grant period thus far, you'll see that we've done over, you know, 693 people. A lot of those folks, and you can look at this in your own time, you'll see that our biggest caseload is with the courts and the small claims and the community side. And it speaks for itself. The number of people who have solutions and come up with that empowerment to mediate that is around that 60 to 70%. Those who are satisfied, when you add those together, it gets into that 85%. And you'll see the graphs because at the end of each mediation, parties are given a survey and complete that. Kirk gets copies of that, and that goes also part of our grant requirement as well. And that's where those numbers come from. And that's kind of that high-level overview of what we've been doing in that partnership, and you can look through that on your own time, and you know, you have a lot on your agenda to see if you have specific questions or other pieces. Or
is there a relation for how does the mediation and resolutions in Josephine County kind of weight against our neighboring counties, so to speak? Are we keeping up with the Joneses, or we have room to...
Well, there's actually some things that you guys do better, and that means that we service both. I have a working relationship with Leslie Donnelly, who's the Grants Pass Public Safety, and she has this great piece of, she refers her most difficult, challenging community pieces to us, and that we partner together and have that. We've done meetings and cul-de-sacs on the corners just to have that community communication in figuring out stuff, because they recognize it doesn't raise to the level of being a crime, but these people have to live together, and it also takes a lot of resources away from law enforcement in that. And so we have a really good ongoing partnership in that, and that communication as well as with the courts as well.
Well, I don't have any other questions, either of you, Mr. Morgan, or
so. You guys are what Mediation Works was.
We are what Mediation Works was. We're the same. We just have a new look, a new name, trying to get a little more recognition.
I did a mediation conflict resolution course at SOU online in 2013, so I was familiar with the program then. And then Brandon Atkins has talked to me a lot about restorative justice and programs with you guys.
And I also do services with through Crosby Smith, who is another, actually, he trained through one of our training facilities years ago in that piece. And one of our programs we do is the Effect Impact class, which we do in partnership with his office.
I wish we were able to do more with the adult level as well, but the kids is critical.
The kids are critical, and I think you point toward the training piece, and I think that is important as well. And it would be great to do more, to be available more to do more training. I think that's important, helping people have the skills of mediation and good communications.
And it just, the name change was really about more recognition about all the services we provide. I would joke that when they went through the process to say, well, yes, of course mediation works, but we have all these other services we do, and again, having that brand piece is really good change.
So the question before us is, county participation opt out of community dispute resolution through University of Oregon. So if we're opting out, we're opting out of the University of Oregon program.
This is part of this oxymoron work.
And into Resolve, which is just basically you both do the same thing, but we have to
refer to your county council for addressing that.
Opting out of the option to locally select provides the University of Oregon to select a contractor and grant appropriate those funds, and they will probably select the exact same people we would select had we not opted out and taken it upon ourselves to solicit an RFP and go through all of that. So
it's a technical, it probably could be characterized as a technical piece.
But we are given that option if we choose. Yes. I imagine that there are counties that really want that, you know, ability to really cite who they want to do this position, this task. It's almost like LADPC, you know, it's a local, the drug and alcohol. LADPC selecting those providers who are going to do those services for the county. We could opt out of that, and those funds would just channel through automatically. But to keep consistent, we opt out.
So if we opt out, we're going to be able to make our own choice.
No.
If we opt out, we let University of Oregon select on behalf of us.
Yes.
They still have to fill out an application and go through their process.
Yes.
And my understanding is not everybody actually can meet the requirements.
That's
and
correct.
So fewer entities like you guys can meet them. And so back in 2015, we opted out just literally to save time, and because we have gone through the process before and only one entity met the requirements. So we aren't losing anything we don't lose anything as a county if we opt out. It's opting out of the program they would still, it's not like they're going to take the money away from the county, because the law school then, you know, they still would get the grant money, assuming they're the selected entity.
I need your whiteboard.
Right there.
Part is tied to that old statutory language.
Yes.
There aren't any other programmatic questions.
Anything else that we can answer for you?
And our contact and Delta's card is there, so that's that one out.
I almost went down this route of a career.
Oh, huh. Mediation.
I enjoyed the class that much. I was signed up for the next level, and then
I bet it's incredibly rewarding to bring two parties that are right on the verge of war.
Yes. We're banging your head on the wall.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't consider that there is such a thing as a win-win. In a situation where there's, you know, conflict.
Right.
And there is.
Not to count how much courtroom time you're saving, right? Correct?
Yes.
A lot. And that's pretty valuable around here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We believe that we save our circuit courts considerably, and taxpayer dollars, by providing our services. I want to say that we're a cheap date, but we're pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm. And it's also often in partnership with the legal community, because they're the ones who can advise and provide that legal insight as far as process and that. So it empowers parties to really do good negotiation. And that one of the pieces of mediation is because of the confidentiality piece in there, that they can have a good conversation without it worrying about showing up somewhere else versus that adversarial
court. When you settle something at this stage, does it become a judgment? Because the judge never did hear it.
So,
results in a mediation agreement, so like a stipulated agreement that is then filed with the court. So
but it's not filed as a judgment.
Only
if say, have you ever had any judgments against you, and you go, no, because you haven't. Because I'll just give you an example. I went through mediation on a small claims thing with, I won't mention who, and we settle it, and yet there's a judgment on my name and my company that it was the judgment. It's listed as a judgment when it was. I felt the reason I entered into mediation was to avoid that. that we were going to settle it out of court, and we did. We settled it out, wrote the check, did everything with everybody. Shook hands and walked away.
Yep.
And
yep.
Then when I look at it, said, yeah, you have a judgment against your company. So I'm curious about that. So you can ask questions. We'll talk about later.
Okay, we'll move this forward.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming in.
Yes. Thanks for having us.
The next one?
Thanks for what you do.
Thank you.
Okay,
So if you
on for tomorrow, and we don't have a letter ready, but I just found out today that you don't have to have a resolution. So we could easily put this letter together for you to sign, have something to sign tomorrow.
That'd be great.
Okay.
I thought it said in the process that your resolution was required, but you found out different?
Yeah, I have an email from the person I put this. So the letter is fine.
Excellent. So item number 3. Intergovernmental agreement between Oregon Department of Justice and Fiber Optic Cable to install the Human Justice Building in the Ann Basker. There's an amendment to this, so this is amendment number 1.
That's why it's back before us, because there's an amendment, because I thought we already approved it.
We did, and it's a couple grand more.
We approved it at 7 something.
Yeah, no, it's 10. Mr. Bryce.
Yes. This has come before the board. And since then, two items have surfaced. One is the cost. The original $7,080 was from the Justice Building to the Ann Basker, which again, the state court is picking up. And then it was discovered that we needed to get the fiber from where it hits the Justice Building up to our IT closet. So that's the additional $3,000. And again, the court is paying for that additional amount. The second item was, once this agreement was fully executed, we have 3 days to complete it. So the second is simply changing a date, and that was an error on our part.
So for an internal, why couldn't this have been done an amendment of this $3,000? It doesn't need to come to the board. It's a date. It's not changing the intent of it. For us, couldn't I have done this as the facilities liaison?
This is an IGA.
Yeah, traditionally it is an IGA versus a, exactly.
Okay.
That's
it's good for the board to know why you're seeing this, because technically, if this had been a standard contract, you didn't need to bother you guys.
Yep,
but it's an IGA. It sounds like something you need to do.
I have no problems.
That's great.
Thank you very much.
Cool. Okay, we'll get it done tomorrow. I'll give you 3 more days. Okay. Item number 4 is agreement to guarantee future dedication of right-of-way and street flood crossing permit, Garner Road. And then the second one, item number 5, is Latigo Ranch Road. So both of these we have Public Works.
Mm-hmm. Okay, gentlemen, there's an ample amount of legwork, but I think we'll provide a little bit of background to the extent the board wants to hear about it.
We can provide some background. The Garner Road Street Flood, there has been one request before on this street flood, and it was denied many, many years ago. Somebody had proposed some sort of a partition beyond the street flood. It died, and I never found out why. There was no signatures on the permit. It was just one of the ones laying in our file. And here we are several years later, and Marlon Kibian is a grower, and he has leased a parcel owned by Mr. Carmody, and it was very tricky for him to get access to that parcel. He needs access to get an address, an electrical permit, so that he can move forward with his grow operation. So he approached us for a tree cut passing permit.
I don't think that it's necessary, but for full disclosure, and I guess potential conflict of interest, my family's ranch is probably within 1,000 feet of the end of Garner Road. We access power off of that. So I'm not familiar with the owners or anything like that, but I just throw that out there.
Okay.
So which one is? No, I'm just kidding.
We're not actually on that map, but
you're
not too far. Yeah.
So Marlon has been very busy.
Marlon's a preliminary.
It's amazing what the guy's done in the last year with just the generator. He'd been using that to get his power out there. And he did have a partner for a while, but he bought his partner out at some point. And so anyway, Mr. Gideon is looking for access not too far beyond the street, but somewhere in this vicinity. We tried to talk him into getting it down this flag owned by Mr. Carmody's son. The son is a competitive grower on this parcel. He said, So Marlon's, I'm not quite sure how he's getting in and out right now, but he needs to have his own access for his own address. These are state requirements. Each grow needs his own address. And so that's why he's in asking for this street foot crossing permit.
Great.
I noticed on there that he doesn't own the property that you mentioned the name of the person.
Carmody.
Carmody, and it was a Mr. and Mrs. Carmody both owned it. He crossed out Mrs. Carmody because I think she passed away.
And there's a copy of her desk.
And you have it. Okay, I just want to know, make sure that Mrs. Carmody has a desk certificate on file. And so
she's
not part of the program. Okay.
She is not part of the program. So that's it in a nutshell, unless you all have some questions.
Yeah. The only thing that I have and is a concern to me, and I've talked to Julie about it, is this guy's been in here for quite a long time in our system.
Yes.
And I would like to see somehow we straighten that out so that he doesn't spend a year plus in our system. Mm-hmm. And then I said, you know, the ball's back in his court because we found out he didn't own the property. I think that should have been a question at the very beginning. Of the system rather than
fundamentally.
After 14 months, you find out that he doesn't own the property. He may have been asked that question by the county at some point in time and he wasn't sure or he wasn't truthful about it. I don't know. He seems like a pretty stand up guy.
He is a stand up guy.
The ball's in his court. You know, it's his fault now. Well, it is not. In my mind, that's part of it. I mentioned to Julie, I think Julie's going to fix that at the planning stage. And I don't know where I want to see the entire process of street plug vacation because it gets hung up here. I want to know what that process is so that if we can streamline that process, I'm sure this isn't going to be the end of these street plug vacations. There's two of them before us tomorrow.
So with this one and another one that we're going to talk about.
Okay, all right. So that's my only concern about the whole process is that I think it can be streamlined to maybe make it a lot easier. I think that's one of the complaints that we hear time and time and time again is the planning process.
Well, there should be no. I think what you're saying is totally right on. It should be very easy for somebody planning to say, you were presented this 14 months ago. It says number one, you're the owner of the property. You're not the owner. You need to get power of attorney. You know, it says right there. Somehow there should be some thing to go back to that he right. doesn't have the license.
He doesn't have the authority to apply for that.
But he doesn't have the license to come to you or to me and say, you guys are holding this up. It's been 14 months. And it's like, but you are not the owner, and you haven't dealt with the fact that you haven't gotten a power of attorney or, you know, mitigated that. So don't be telling me that we've been held in this.
Well, I don't know if that's what the case is. I don't know, because I don't know the process. I don't know the application. I don't know what is written on the application. We kind of went through a very similar thing across the pond over here, and what it amounted to is that we had a department head that was purposely slowing things up, and council said, okay, here's how we're going to deal with that. If it gets hung up on somebody's desk for longer than 30 days, it's an automatic approval, or it goes right to the council, and they say, yeah, we'll approve it or not. And I don't want to get to that stage because I want to make sure that we have things in place that we don't get tangled up with Marlon having to come to me or having to come to you or to Commissioner Morgan because he comes in with his story and I don't have your story. I don't know what the process is. I would like to see what the process is. And if there's something that we can suggest or we kick it around and, as a team, and say this, we missed this, you know, that wasn't on the very beginning of the application as we think it should be, but maybe it's not there. I don't know. I've never seen the application.
The first thing I would say is that planning actually has no function in a street flood crossing.
That's what
Julie. She says, I don't even know why they keep coming to me. So I don't know that.
Probably due from the nexus of needing an OLCC permit, thus triggering the land use compatibility, mm-hmm. LUX, and you need an address. So that the applicant doesn't know that planning has nothing to do with the street plug, because that's the thing holding up them getting an address.
Well, I would just like to say what the process is. So if I come if somebody comes walking in here into this building and says, well, I want a street plug vacation, I need to know what that process is, and if there's a form to fill out, where do they get the form? Where do I send them? Do I send them to Public Works? Do I send them to Legal? Does it go from Public Works to Legal? Does it go, where does it go?
For a street plug crossing permit, it starts at Public Works.
Okay. I need to know that. I'd like to have somebody write out what the process is, and so that we can streamline it, and if there's a form that they fill out a form at your Public Works.
You know, part of the holdup on this is my rookie status. It was my first year here. Both of these street plug processes kind of hit me upside the head, mm-hmm. and I'll take blame for holding this up.
I'm not trying to blame anybody here. I just want to make sure that we can avoid something along the line, so it doesn't get to our desk. You know, I think you guys are.
Well, it would always have to get.
No. He means
eventually.
It means that we're still here 14 months later.
He means that people are coming to the board saying, this is,
I don't know where it
where went. Is this, why is it taking so long?
And over across the pond, I had the applicant come to me as a city councilor and say, I don't even know what happened to him. I put in an application, and when I asked staff, what happened to this application? I never got an answer. And that bothered me immensely, because I'm asking a question about process and how it happens. That's all I want, is just to say, your first year and it hit you between the eyes, that's fine. It hit me between the eyes, too, because I'd never heard of a street plug. My street plug is red, and the fire department works that, but I had no clue.
Yeah.
So I want an education.
Well, from a standpoint of board efficiency, I don't want to know. I don't want to know the process of a street plug. That's why we have liaisons. So we've already delegated Commissioner DeYoung to facilitating how to get this process run more smoothly, and even delegating him the authority to approve street plug mm-hmm. approval, unless there's a need for a controversial element that he discovers and says, you know what, this one might be one we want to bring to the board. He's got that discretion, and I would love to see that implemented. We don't see very many of these. I think when you first started, you said you came in maybe one a year. You've had a couple in your first year, and so maybe these happen more frequently as time goes on, and then we don't have any for a while. But I have 100% trust in Commissioner DeYoung to facilitate this all the way through to the end.
I feel real uncomfortable, because I've had really, when he brought to me, he said, yeah, here, I'll sign that. I want you guys on board to tell me, no, there's an issue here, and this is what we're looking at. And so that's what I'm after. I just need to know what the process is. I have no clue what the process is and where it starts.
Can we not go over that today, but we can go to the Let It Go street plug and try to move that forward for tomorrow? Let it go.
I call it Let It Go just to avoid that.
Okay. Let It Go.
I just was breaking out into, you know, it's Frozen songs in my head.
It's Hispanic and it's Latigo is my line.
Probably what it is, too. So the Latigo Ranch street plug, shown on the tax maps, it's actually a bigger street plug than what is shown on Google Earth. Okay. This is down in Williams as well. This Raleigh Road has never been built. It's on Great Bridge. So there was a lot of question, why doesn't he just take access off of there? Well, he can't, because that road doesn't exist. Here's how the property exists in the field. This is Matthew Geyer's property. This parcel was enlarged as a result of a lot line adjustment. And when we realized he wanted access, we did some digging, and lo and behold, here's a street plug. And it looks a lot different than it is on the tax map. You can see how the cul-de-sac was actually built in the field. It's a lot further west than we had anticipated. So he had to get permission to cross the street plug here. And he's in the same boat as Mr. Gibeon. And then it took a long time to get this permission. He wants to put the house on this parcel map. He has to get power. In order to get power, he has to get an address. In order to get an address, he's got to get it. So that's what he's having this one do.
Do you, on these street flood vacations, do you have to notify adjacent property owners or anything of that sort? Like,
No.
Not at all. It's just for that particular address.
It's basically county property that the board is granting permission for somebody to cross.
And street flood is like for future, if Latigo Ranch Road were to continue on,
yes,
the county still owns right away on what the future Latigo Ranch Road would look like.
Right, although it's not right away, it's like a tax lot.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Can I ask a quick Public Works question?
Yeah,
certainly.
I had a call today on Azalea Drive at Youth Creek.
Okay.
And a resident on Hickson Drive says there's a sign with an arrow down his road, which is a dead end.
Mm-hmm.
Wondered if it would be more appropriate for the signs to go up to Robertson Bridge Road saying dead end ahead or road ends ahead or something so people have a chance to turn around, since all of the streets before Youth Creek are dead ends. Robertson's the only through street.
Mm-hmm.
But this man was upset that people are going down to try to get through as a detour, and instead it's just a turnaround, so they're going 60 plus miles an hour down his road. I just thought I'd pass it on.
Yeah,
he was calling me about marijuana taxes, and somehow he's like, have you seen what's happened to my street? I've seen pictures, it's creepy. No, anyhow, it was just one of those things that they were concerned about there not being an opportunity to turn around sooner when there's a thoroughfare versus.
We're actually planning to have it open tomorrow.
Perfect.
The plan, anyway.
Just about made it. If you were going to have 2 weekends over the spring break, so good job.
Okay.
Leave the sign up on Jason just for the fun. No, I'm just kidding.
Item number
I had quite a few calls on that, though, when I explained to them why they're closed now. And I said, because we're working on the spring break and the bus schedules and so on and so forth. I think everybody was okay with it. It was pretty substantial. If you lived on Youth Creek, to go up the Upper River Road and around it, it added some time to it. But when you get that done, it's basically
13
days.
Right.
Good job.
So, you just send it here.
Well, looks good, though.
Huh?
It's a draft. That's the letter.
Yeah, good.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Item number 6 is letter to BLM regarding coordination.
You can get that process for me in the form and stuff.
Sure.
Curiosity. Thank you very much.
So,
I'm sorry. Could I ask real quick, do you want us there for this tomorrow?
I don't. It's up to Commissioner Dion.
I think we're okay.
Okay.
You know, it's pretty straightforward. As I have the maps and stuff, but I think they're in the packet there.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is not the same letter from Helen Scott because it's referencing Senate 391.
Okay, I've got the letter.
Yeah, okay. So the board might remember there's a letter that came in from Helen Scott regarding coordination with the BLM.
There is
a letter from Scott. It's dated March 6th, so just about a month ago. Oregon, Washington, BLM. Secretary Zinke signs orders to expand access to public lands, urging quickly request dates for timely coordination meetings with at least the Medford and or GP offices of the BLM, which we do annually. This BLM process will go quickly and Josephine County must not be left out. So it's just a reflection of Zinke's management, expanded public access, and getting a specific meeting with a BLM delegate to talk about that issue. So the Forest Service is under the Department of Agriculture. BLM is under the Department of Interior. So Zinke is in charge of that. And I think there's a draft in our thing. It looks fine. I've talked with that lady before. I've spoken with her or met her. And so I definitely endorse the idea of signing.
You all like that?
Yeah. So move forward.
Okay. Sign
it. I think the full board is ready to sign. Do you want that back?
If I may. Thanks for the file.
Whatever.
So do we have are we going to sign a letter then?
Yeah, I think the full board is going to. Is it? We have
it's
a
full board.
Sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on for tomorrow's agenda if you want to do it then.
For the WBS?
Yeah.
Isn't it? Doesn't seem like a WBS issue, but it could be.
Next, number 6.
Okay. Item number 7, letter regarding funding of state prosecutions.
Where do that?
I don't know. Is it on the agenda?
I did have it in my notes, but maybe I... no, okay. Sorry, okay, not on for tomorrow, but it is ready for signature if you want to move it.
I think
so. We don't need to edit it.
It's
well,
we don't have it ready because it's not on.
It'll be ready.
Yeah,
we'll ready for signature file.
It's not
on. Yeah, we'll just sign it. No, when it's ready.
Signature file?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Letter regarding funding of state prosecutions.
Yes, this is a draft in response to the board's stated desire to communicate with the state on this matter, and I've spoken with the district attorney twice in advance of this meeting, vetted the letter with him. He takes no formal position. He did recommend, make a recommendation for one edit in there, which is that we not just reference that there could be legislative action to put this in the budget, but also that could be statutory changes needed to affect this process, and so I think that's probably worth adding in there. Otherwise, here to collect edits and get a sense of where the board wants to go with this matter.
For sake of time, and I haven't really reviewed it as thoroughly as I'd like, I think we could review this on Thursday, if possible, and readdress the issue then.
Okay.
If that's okay.
I will not be here, right? Yeah.
Okay.
I've read it.
Do you have any thoughts so far?
No, I thought it was actually appropriate. We found no statutory or administrative guidance regarding transfer of prosecutorial personnel. So, I don't know, I think it's worth going.
It basically puts it in the state's court. You know, we're not going hat in hand. Yeah, that just goes, hey, please, we do this. It's like, hey, you got to do this. So, that's kind of the posture that's what
I
assume.
I would ask that we CC also Representative David Brock Smith and
sure.
Representative Dallas Hurd as they represent portions of Josephine County,
okay.
Not just Carl Wilson and Dwayne Stark.
Certainly. And we can put Senator Cruz on there also.
Okay.
In that sense.
Herman's on there. Senator Brochet.
Why don't you put him on that?
He's there.
Great.
Yes.
Okay.
So we had three.
Yeah,
Senator Brochet and Wilson and Stark, but knowing that we have more representatives, I want to make sure they're all included.
Yeah, we've got four and two.
Yes.
So six total. Great.
We'll do that.
I think it's really important that that be, you know, a position that the board is solid on. So when we do that, it'll come before a weekly business session. The full board will vote on this. It's a policy of saying that, you know, we're expressing this interest to the state. So, you know, it'll be something we...
There was a time the state did provide funding towards WBAs.
Absolutely.
They got cut substantially. The most recent budget year was 2003-2004 that they were still providing a portion towards the WBAs. I was told at some point prior to that it was more substantial that they supported them. And I don't know when it was that Commissioner Haugen was chair of AOC.
It was a while ago.
It would give me a time reference to find out where the budgetary was that the state did formally fund these positions in a more substantial way. It was a state function. The other side of it that's not mentioned is they provide the other two legs of the three-legged stool of prosecutorial with the defense attorneys and the courts, but they're neglecting the prosecution. So it's the only other portion I would say that they have previously provided this funding. It is part of a three-tier system that they are funding the other two tiers. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, though, but it is a state function.
You want to make it all a state function?
Correct.
It certainly seems as though, you know, besides them standing up and representing the state, the indigent defense doesn't say that. You know, they don't say that they're representing the state, even though the state's paying for it. They're representing their client. And them working on behalf of the state, and we're paying for it, defending state laws before a state judge, there's your other, they're state laws. They're not even, you know, county codes and such. So rarely would they ever be.
The district attorney is appointed by the governor, not county. It's an entirely
or
a state.
Elected by, yeah.
Well, no, when Stephen Campbell stepped
down. No,
I know. Oh, yeah.
But otherwise, they're
it's an elected
state
position,
elected
but when
official,
they
not in our slate.
It is a state position, so
you.
I would almost think a portion of that in there.
Okay.
It's a state function.
Okay.
You know, in the vacation of the position, it is appointed by the governor.
The DA being a state officer. Okay,
correct.
DA being a state officer.
His deputies are representing him on behalf of the state.
Yes.
Yeah, they're actually, deputies. They're okay. Well, I think those points ought to be covered in the letter, having not reviewed it. I think we need to make our case as strong as possible with all the points that really point arrows to saying this isn't something we're just coming up with. A program that we're trying to give back to the state, like, I don't know, assessment taxation. Department of Revenue could do that for us. No, it's a local deal. People elect an assessor. They elect the treasurer. So it's odd they don't elect a tax collector. Don't you think that that's the person they would want to? But maybe they shouldn't anyway. So, matters from commissioners? I think that was a first draft, and so we'll revisit that letter next week.
Okay.
Then we won't be able to do anything with it this week with not having Commissioner Morgan.
Okay.
But we could address it on Thursday, but I guess there's for no real need. We'll address it next week.
I think so.
Okay.
We need to do it all as a board. Yeah,
next week it is.
Okay.
That did need more teeth.
Yeah, oh, for sure. That's one we got to go arm in arm on. Any other matters from commissioners on legal?
I think that while we're on this topic, I would like us at some point to have an evaluation and discussion of potentially of our tax collector position, of whether that should remain with treasurer versus assessor. There's more assessors in the state that handle that function than necessarily treasurer. I just think that it might be worth having an evaluation of, are we as efficiently operating as the county in the current method, or should the conversation happen of, could it be better? I think our current treasurer is doing a great job with what she's doing with that, but tax collection and assessment, it's a question, especially with the Senate bill, or sorry, House Bill 2373 going for asking for reimbursement to 2% for assessment and tax collecting. Are those separate functions from different departments, one department? I think it just needs to be a discussion. And this is not meant to be a reflection of current practice of anybody involved, just simply, are we being the most efficient that we can with these processes since we appoint the tax collector position from the board?
So it's also part of I don't mind the conversation or evaluation at all, but also a broader conversation like what we've seen in other counties, them changing charters to reflect that an assessor is more of an appointed position as opposed to an elected position. It begs the question, same thing with the treasurer. You know, you theoretically could elect some Joe Schmo with no treasurer history or whatever. There's no qualifications for that position, but they're managing a lot of liability for the county. Millions, $71 million is into their care for a while. And there are counties that are going to, those are appointed positions, not elected.
When you say there's no qualifications, the one thing that bothers me is there's no background check. County commissioners, all the people that file for county commissioner, is there something in the law that says you can't question somebody that applies for an elected official position? Because it was just amazing that, it's like treasurer, there's a lot of money there, and you can't have somebody that's been convicted of embezzling money from Packard Bell, Hewlett Packard Bell or something. It's just amazing why there isn't any qualifications and say, I got to be that.
It's really in the charter.
And they got to...
Charter or state law, depending on the position.
Yeah.
Sheriff has to have... Sheriff eligibility falls under some state laws. Ours are under the charter, like you said, so it depends on the position. The district attorney and legal counsel have to be bar, Oregon bar, so there's... So, again, back to the charter.
I'm not so sure that our legal counsel is, I don't know.
Are you required to be a bar member?
No.
Yes.
The clerk made a determination, but that could be, I can see us having the authority to, as a county, and elect a legal counsel that doesn't. He outsources. He has somebody on retainer, you know, in his office who is the legal counsel, who's bar.
I think we looked that up, and when it was voted on, it was very clear that they had to be a bar member.
I don't feel like the charter says it. Charter doesn't say that.
Well, the charter doesn't do it. I think she means the measure that
the
actually
measure
went
that people
the
voted it in. Because it was voted
good.
In.
That would be, yeah. That would be good.
I think we looked at it when the certain person.
Yeah.
Time.
Oh.
Right. A couple times people have filed.
Oh, sure.
Who didn't.
Who tried to file.
Yes.
I remember Georgette stopping a couple of people who were trying to file, but they weren't, by her assertion, qualified.
Right.
But
once
I don't know if that was just a very, you know, aggressive clerk, or was it really, if it was challenged?
That we looked it up then.
Okay.
Because it was.
That's a very valid question.
I think that the charter, this is one more list of things that the charter should actually address, so.
Well, and I learned today through the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, they have different divisions that are completely separate from each other. And, for instance, the private security only looks at 10 years of history.
Mm.
And they're not law enforcement, so they don't have the same standard. Mm. So you can have someone with a private security identification that has felonies, various other crimes. So, I mean, even the state's not consistent. So us defining would be good.
The question about tax and assessment, being the liaison to both for the last 6 years, there are points of where they don't agree all the time. And I don't necessarily mind people having two different opinions. And it feels like every issue that I've seen has resolved itself okay or ultimately come to the board. And we have, you know, county, we're not paying taxes on county property. You can go ahead and send us a bill. Foreclose on it if you like. After 6 years, guess where it goes? It goes back to us. So we, you know, do that trick. There's been a half a dozen of those issues over the years that find themselves pretty good resolved because there are two people who are different, having different opinions and different interpretations of state statute. If you had one person interpreting those things, I don't know if you'd get to the same positive resolve. There'd probably be a need for more board involvement in their day-to-day functions, which I don't know that that's necessarily a good use of our time. But that's just one consideration of your request to do an evaluation. I don't think it's a bad one. So we'll look into how to do that. I'm not exactly sure. It's a kind of a broad task, so we'll talk about it and figure out how we can come back with something that the board can endorse that's more specific.
And I misquoted the bill number. It was 2363. My apologies.
2363. Anything, Commissioner DeYoung?
Nope, not today.
Okay, I think I'm okay as well.
I think that's surprising after a whole week by myself, but I don't have anything really pressing in the legal side.
Well, we do have some issues that are going to be discussed in executive session that will probably
yes.
be
yes.
An opportunity to answer those. So, yeah?
There was a voicemail that I received. I don't know if everybody received about a piece of property potentially on auction. I forwarded it to Mr. Watson. I don't know when the appropriate time to just ask questions about that or if it would be individually, but it's something to do with Wolf Creek Fire.
Yes, I got that also.
We do have some of the properties on our
executive
session this week. I mean, not maybe that particular piece, but...
I don't see that piece listed on there.
I think you can go over that with Mr. Watson.
If there's
any need to...
And then you can get scheduled if need be.
Yes.
Okay. With nothing further, I'm going to request that we take a short recess. But in the meantime, I think while we are still in public session, I'll just go into executive session and pause after that and then reconvene. So it is 3:34. The board will now go into executive session under the items as follows. Item 9A is County Real Property at 3344 Camp Joy Road. Under ORS 192.6602E, item 9B, County Real Property at 1899 Hamilton Lane, under ORS 192.6602E. Item 9C, Planning Enforcement, 380 Murphy Creek Road, under ORS 192.6602H. Item 9D, Confidential Memo Regarding Dog Euthanasia, ORS 192.6602F. Item 9E, Confidential Memo sanctuary status, ORS 192.6602F, item number 9F, Josephine County and Jackson County versus PERS / Marion County, case 17CV01027, under ORS 192.6602H, item number 9G, emergency operations plan resolution 2017-019, in the matter of adopting the emergency operations plan dated February 2017, under ORS 192.6602F and ORS 192.501, 18, and 23. These previously outlined agenda and ORSs provide for the board to go into executive session. No decision may be made in executive session. At the end of executive session, the board will return to open session to deliberate and take action if necessary on any of the listed items. At this time, the recorder will now be turned off.